Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
to you by your remedies and the law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very bluntly ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy is in the law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. If you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Those of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. So there are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. virtual clinic where they'll ask you what your hot point is to him. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse or the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedies in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, thank you so very much for that disclaimer. We appreciate you. And this evening, Brother John is going to be sharing with us tonight the etymology of the bar. Now, this topic is not about your local watering hole or what's on tap at the local pub. John most likely is going to take us back in the journey in time to the Middle Ages of jolly old England, where knights were bold and had men called esquires that took care of them. We're going to learn about the Bar Association tonight, the British Accredited Registry. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John.
Thank you, Michael, and Martin, for your very kind and gracious introduction, gentlemen. Thank you. There's an old saying that says you shall know the truth and the truth shall set you free. Sometimes when we've been brought into court and we would like to have counsel there, they say, well, you can go choose an attorney from the local bar or we can assign you one. And, maybe you say, well, I would like my mother or my father or my brother to appear with me or my sister or this friend. No, no, no. They have to be a member of the local bar and the Bar Association. The Sixth Amendment is very, 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 very straightforward and very explicit that when it says to have the assistance for counsel in their defense. And, actually, I'll go ahead and read the whole sixth. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of that state and the district in wherein the crime has been committed, which the district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature of the cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witness against him, and to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. The assistance of counsel is one of the primary pillars of the Sixth Amendment. And the Sixth Amendment, some people don't realize that that was ratified into the existence on December 15th, 1791. And the first appearance of a bar association in the United States was on in 87 years later, in 1878, on August 25th, in New York, and in Saratoga Springs, New York, and that's where they got together and formed the ABA, the American Bar Association. And this is almost 100 years. It's 87 years later after the Sixth Amendment was penned. And yet, a lot of times they'll say, hey, I'm sorry, you have to have a member of the Bar Association. It was, excuse me, where in the Constitution does it require that? No, 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 we require that. Ah, ha, ha, ha. And why? Well, going back, as Michael was pointing out, the original, the term Bar Association, now, the it had many sources, and most of them, the genuine etymology, you can't find it on the Internet anymore. It's been sterilized off. Michael was very, very correct about the title entitlement of the Bar Association. Now they're saying that it's because there's a bar between the front half of the courtroom and the back half, and that it meant the body of lawyers, the legal profession, that according to English custom was allowed to pass through the gate in before the bar, and that they were allowed to be near the magistrate or in the interior or the inside area of the workings of the court, not in the spectators. And they call that the inns of court. And the railing divided the hall in the inns of court. And originally, back in the 16th century, it was so that the students occupying the body of the hall and readers or benches on the other side and or the spectators, while the barristers or prevaricators or attorney, what we now call attorneys, were pleading the case forward to that. And to some degree, there is some accuracy in that definition. It's not completely without background, but the bottom line is that it's more of an English custom and history that right now we have a case in California and there's a case in Louisiana where and a case in Wisconsin where individuals are saying, well, I'm sorry, sir, you cannot appear with them, and I'm not going to allow you to talk. And in Wisconsin, that judge is very, very surly. He doesn't even allow you to voice an objection. I mean, to speak. You know, you raise your hand, he says, I'm not going to recognize you. And they know that what they're doing is highly wrong and highly illegal, and they don't want anything entered into the court record that would indicate that. And in Louisiana, there are currently one of the cases that was currently set up there, we currently have are pleading in there, and the judge was very, very upset when the Louisiana Bar Association, when we pointed out that it wasn't until March 12, 1941, over 150 years later, almost exactly 150 years later, that the Louisiana Bar came into effect after the right to have counsel was given by the Sixth Amendment. And so at this juncture, one thing that's very, very important is that if a judge or a magistrate is going to color outside the lines on any level and something small like this, then they're willing to color outside the lines on anything. So right now, the thing that's very, very important is that if you have a case pending, especially a criminal case, or you know somebody that has a criminal case pending, and the attorneys that are members of the bar are officers of the court. They are not inclined to do anything that or make any motions that could embarrass the bench, could appear to be contrary to the bench's perspective or behavior. And in certain cases, individuals have indicated that there's quiet attributes of secret society that apply where, because they're officers of the court, they cannot object to the judge or do anything that would potentially risk the judge going to jail. So with that end, an attorney, there's many things that a regular paid attorney, a member of the bar, will not plead. They will not state. One attorney right now in one of the students' cases that we're working with dances around and is dancing around the pleadings that have been put in to indicate that so that what happened was is recently one of them put it on the state's attorney or the in this case and that and another one they put it on the U.S. attorney's office to explain why, because they couldn't have somebody appear with them that wasn't a member of the bar. And to that end, the Louisiana case, we ended up with, right now it's still under deliberation, but we pointed out that it was a felony in the second degree under 18 U.S.C. 242 to deprive this individual of their rights to the counsel that they chose, not the court. And when we pointed out that the court's assigning an attorney, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it's not the counsel of choice, then the attorney is not acting the way the defendant wants him, that we were going to seek to have the judgment overturned because he was forced to accept the attorney and not counsel that he was requesting. And to that end, when you say object, Your Honor, you would be committing a felony in doing that. The attorney will never say that. And there's been times where I've had to ask. I says, Your Honor, in appearing amicus curiae, if for the court to make that observation or that decision. Is the court committing a felony in the second degree depriving the defendant of their rights? And there's been times where, initially, almost always, they threaten you right off the bat. There's a couple times where they says, you know, that's a good point. I'm gonna change my decision, or I'm gonna change that. And so what happens is that they correct it right there in court because they see the gravity of what's happening. Nowadays, the judge, many, many times, over half the cases now, the judge won't even allow a non-barred person to speak. Hang on a second. My apologies. My throat was getting a little dry there. It's they're depriving you of your Sixth Amendment right to counsel. Now, the Bar Association originally, under British common law, was set up so that out of difficulty and frustration of having to deal with the common people, meaning they're not skilled in the area of law, the judges, out of their impatience and the incapacity to work with the common person, first of all says, well, you know, you need to have somebody who knows what they're doing with you. Then eventually the barristers and prevaricators and attorneys, et cetera, that they found that it was kind of a neat little society and a neat little monopoly when somebody had to come to somebody with a law degree or a law license before they could come to court. And to that end, most of the judges that were appointed or elected were also attorneys or had come to be attorneys. And so amongst them, it was very easy for them to decide to band together and bar non-member individuals from pleading case in court. a few years back, I had it. There was a fire, and it took our place. And I had a file drawer that had many court orders. The one that I really liked the most was out of a Utah court, U.S. District Court in Utah, back in the 90s, from Chief Justice D. Benson, where he gave me the right to appear in any Utah court without a law degree or a bar membership. And that also meant that I could plead before the U.S. District Court there in Salt Lake City. And D. Benson almost got killed over that. He was a member of a religious organization that there are many other attorneys were members of. And at one point, his life was he was personally threatened. And eventually, they backed off, and he was told not to do it again. But, well, not use the word but. Instead of using the B word, I'll use the A word, and word. And it means including or in addition to. B, the but word, means just count all the forms stated in favor of the about to what's be propounded. So when you say, I love you, but, okay, you can just roll right in there, but you don't love me. Or I don't mean to be late, but you actually do mean to be late. Or I didn't mean to be rude. But you can just roll right in there, but you're going to anyway, you know, when they say, but I didn't mean to be rude and I apologize, or I didn't, you know, so the D. Benson almost got killed multiple times. One time it was very, very serious. I call it the Father's grace strikes again in spite of me. For those of you who are a little more studied than others, I find that when we study, the more we study, the more we realize that this place, the starry, miserable third rock from the sun that we call planet Earth and home, had an intelligent designer, or has, current tense, an intelligent designer. And however you choose to refer to that, whether you want to call it space aliens, ET, God, Yahweh, Allah, Yeshua, you know, whatever, you know, spirit beings, ghosts, or whatever, that intelligent designer is out there. And I'll just simply say, never confuse an act of God's grace or that intelligent designer's grace with a blind monkey that may find a banana once in a while. And sometimes I have to admit, you know, I was certain I knew the rules. I was certain I knew the law. I knew exactly, you know, well, I'm going to use the B word now. But I never could have imagined how far that justice would go in breaking the rules. And sometimes it's unconsciously unimaginable. And to that end, some of the attorneys that appear in our courts here nowadays that are they like the esprit de corps of the British law system, and a lot of people they romanticize and build up the character of Brits sometimes as being something more special than an American, and some of their citizens are better than ours over here. Some of them are not. Oh, wait a minute. That means they're just like us. They got the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, whatever. And they're just like us. So they have the same problems we do. A lot of the British practice has seeded and seeped into American jurisprudence over the years, and don't ignore the fact that many Brits still consider America a British colony. And to that end, there are individuals here that still consider America a British colony. And when you look at the gold fringe on the flag that may be present behind the judge, and you realize that that's maritime law flag, and that a lot of the maritime law is straight from British maritime law, literally, almost copied verbatim, some of it. The only thing that's different is the statute numbers and the page numbers. At this juncture, for you to be able to get justice, having somebody that knows the law better than you to sit with you in court so that when they bring challenges against you, that you have a second set of eyes and ears there that can go through and help work with you. Wait a minute. I'm going to go back here and I'm going to look at that. That it says to have a compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor and to have the assistance. Oh, gosh, golly gee willikers. It used the A word, the assistance. It didn't use the R word, represented by counsel. It says the assistance of counsel for his defense. Now, under British law, what happened was that a lot of the property owners and the nobles and the royals, they didn't want to go to court. And what they would do is they worked out an arrangement with which they began a process and a procedure that they called power of attorney. And when the individual didn't want to go to court, they just wanted to send their barrister, their prevaricator, their legal representative. They would sign an agreement, thereby giving that individual the authority to negotiate for them, which included the ability to negotiate a guilty plea, not just a non-guilty, and not just to negotiate when there was a matter of weight of gold or silver at hand, because remember, back then it was gold or silver. They didn't have pieces of cloth that they print on that they call a reserve note. Or, oh, wait a minute. Did he just use the word note? A note is a debt instrument, or a bill is a debt instrument. A $10 bill is a debt instrument. What they're saying is that originally, when they had the gold reserve or silver gold certificates or silver certificates, that was meant that you could take that over to any treasury and get the appropriate weight in silver or gold for that Federal Reserve note that was reserving that for you, so that it was easier to carry around. And, oh, wait a minute. Is that the argument that they used to begin to print money back in the 20s, the teens and 20s, to the bankers began to encourage everybody to print money rather than carry coin? And that's why they went through the ludicrous, horribly atrocious process of, in 1933, making the ownership of gold illegal. And at the same time, the reason why it was eventually struck down was that it states in the Constitution that only, you know, the lawful money can be coined out of gold or silver. And so that eventually did not fly, but it wasn't until they got America drunk on carrying much lighter cash in their pocket, the paper notes, that the debt instruments, the $20 bill, the $100 bill. And, yes, back then there were $1,000 bills and $10,000 bills, and there were $1 million notes available back then. Actually, $1,000 notes are still most people don't know it, but they're still out there and they're still in trade. They go between the international clearance banks and such like that. It's shortly here. They're trying to go to digital currency, and under the current administration, it's kind of interesting that the person leaving office is or that one person in office is potentially trying to do something or escalate, allow something to escalate so that the new administration won't be able to come into office. Maybe put the invoke martial law. And in the midst of that, openly, one of the elected officials currently has made it very, very clear that she intends to invoke digital currency, meaning that cause everyone to have to go electronic funds on everything, which means that the cash and coin and that you may currently have will now become, if you don't deposit it, it'll become worthless. And there's something that most people don't realize, don't recognize, and it doesn't mean much to them, that there's an old writing in the Book of Revelations, and that where with which it says that and he caused all, great or small, rich or poor, free or slave, to receive a mark or a number on his right hand or his forehead, so without with which he could either buy nor sell. And be it known that this is the man, the number of man, the number 666. And what's happening is that people don't seem to realize that shortly there's a numbering system, you know, that this this intelligent designer foretold of that would occur. And what's happening is that people don't realize that to pressure individuals into folding into the system that Satan wants to control them, or that the guy that's doing battle against the intelligent designer, that they're going to cause all, rich or poor, free or slave, to not be able to do business or transact monetary consideration unless you participate in their system. And it says, and any who is found to receive this number on their right hand of their forehead, is their name was blotted out of the Lamb's Book of Life. And no, so the bottom line is that there is no there is no redemption, or there is no hope of eternity when an individual receives this mark or this enumeration. Now, the thing that's very, very important is that there's a battle of good and evil, and the bad guys against the good guys, and that intelligent designer, however you want to look at him, he's looking for a bunch of heavy-duty buddies to spend eternity with. And those that hold out against all of the pressures and the temptations and the torments and stay focused on respecting him, he's going to take them with him, you know, and for eternity. And he's already got some pretty cool things promised. Most people don't realize, you know, what how cool the promises is. And it says that, and it says at one point, it says, "You showed me a pure river of water, of the water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne. And in the midst of it, there was a tree on either side that bore fruit, manner of fruits, once every month, 12 months. And the leaves were the healing of the nations, and there was no more curse." And it goes on to talk about the tree of life, and it says, "And the streets were paved with gold so pure you could see through it." Wow, that's pretty intense. But we only have so many shopping days in our passbook account of life. And the passbook account of life, the currency that's in there isn't nickels or gold or dimes or pence or denarius. It's hours, minutes, and seconds. And you can sell some of your hours and minutes and seconds every week into bondservancy and convert it to gold or silver or ferns or Federal Reserve notes, and that's what you're doing. You're spending, you're taking some of the currency that's in your passbook account of life and temporarily converting it to monetary that you will be able to buy or sell or do whatever. They're shortly going to attempt to take that away from you. They're trying to take away your ability to defend yourself. The etymology of the bar is going back to the British common law, puts you in a situation where they want to represent you, not appear with you as counsel. There is a big difference. At this juncture, when somebody represents you, like those British lords and the nobles and the landowners, etc., that person that's representing you has literally the authority to throw you away. And if you want to represent yourself and in your own case have counsel, they frown on that. Because number one, they also know that they are so drunk on the misbehavings of the court and the proceeds of it that they, and many of those judges, they're just hanging on long enough to get what's called tenure. And when you get tenure, what happens is that it's the condition with which you have been at that, owned that property, et cetera, been working at that job, et cetera, that something happens, and based on how many years a certain length of time, then you have certain benefits and privileges. With the judiciary, that means that you're salary now continues for the rest of your life, much like the senators and representatives. You know, when the Congress, when they vote a raise, they can't vote the raise for the same term of office that they're currently in, but for the future office, so they get elected and they get to the new term that has the new level of tenure and their the pay raise that they had, then they've got that for life, just like the president retains his salary for life. the judges know that there's a couple of things that can break the tenure, and one of them is being convicted of a felony, and their tenure can be taken away because of that. And so if they're depriving you of your civil rights or your – excuse me. Did he say the word civil? I want you to never, ever, ever use that word civil in the, when you're discussing 18 U.S.C. 241 or 18 U.S.C. 242 or 42 U.S.C. 1983. The term rights. If they're depriving you under your rights under color of law, then – technically, they have already committed a felony. And so what happens is that, for those of you who haven't heard 18 U.S.C. 242 before, it's the Declaration of Rights under color of law, and it briefly states, and it's a very, very short statute. It's one paragraph. It says, whoever under color of law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom willfully subjects a person of any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or the laws of the United States, comma, or to different punishments, pains, or penalties on account of the person, such person being an alien, or by reason of color, race, then prescribed for the punishment of sentence, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for not more than 1 year or both. And, and if bodily injury results from the acts committed in this violation of this section, or if such acts include the use or attempted use or threatened use of a dangerous weapon, explosives, fire, shall be fined on this title for and imprisoned for not more than 10 years or both. And if death results from the acts committed in this violation of this section, or if such acts include kidnapping or the attempt to kidnap, aggravated sexual abuse, or the attempt to commit aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to kill, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for any term of years or for life or both, or may be sentenced to death. Does anybody, when you're out there, if you get pulled over for a traffic violation like a taillight, and that officer decides to arrest you, can you be arrested for equipment infraction? No, you cannot. They have to come up with another charge before they can arrest you. But has anybody thought about what the statute is for wrongful arrest? And I hear absolute silence. And you're all correct. There isn't one. It's kidnapping under color of law. That's what wrongful arrest is. And it says, and if such acts include the use of or attempted use or threatened use of a dangerous weapon, if you are being threatened with arrest or charges for that taillight, and we have one student right now that literally is being threatened with going to prison for a that started all off a taillight infraction. But if that taillight, if they're threatening to arrest you because you're not willing to sign the ticket, and by the way, signing the ticket, that's just your written promise to appear. That's the only thing that signing the ticket is that you don't have to go in and post bail. They're letting you be released on your own recognizance. And although some there, I have actually personally heard two judges say this, well, you signed the ticket, you're guilty. And I had, in both cases, I was not the one that was currently on trial. I was not there for this other party, but in both cases, I stood up and raised my hand. And the first one, and I remember the judge, I remember his name, Judge Leon Emerson. And the reason I know him so well is because I was his paper boy when I was young. And I says, sir, with that, I objected to the judge, I says, at this juncture, are we potentially committing a felony here? You know, and Leon Emerson looked at me and he shook his head and he started to laugh and he says, not bad for a 12-year-old, but make sure and he said, and everybody started laughing in court, and but they at this juncture, if you know what is happening there and you can explain it, then that judge, you know, for that officer to arrest you for a taillight, he's wearing a firearm, wearing a gun. What's your confidence level that he would never, ever, ever use that to either coerce or stop somebody from resisting arrest, meaning that the officer does not have the authority to arrest you because he doesn't have doesn't have justiciable standing with a crime that he witnessed you commit. So at this juncture, if he doesn't have justiciable standing to arrest you, then the threatened use of deadly force, if he did, you know, and I've seen officers unsnap their weapons and unsnap their guns, and you know that they're intimidating you. They're intimidating the individual right there. And I was stopped behind somebody one time, and This is back in the days of the smallest camcorder tape that you could have was a VHS, and I had one in the car at the time. And I was on my way home from work, and the battery in that silly thing was charged, and I videoed it. And later on, we got them to dismiss the charges. I didn't know who the person was that was getting arrested. It was in traffic, and we got stopped behind the officer, and I happened to get the license plate number and everything, and I just didn't like what I saw. The gentleman and his wife and three children were released 3 days later. It started with an equipment violation, I found out, that he would, because the gentleman, we were driving along and he wasn't speeding, and all of a sudden this patrol car smoozled his way in between us and the car in front and turned on his lights, and as he slowed down, we were kind of blocked in, and I reached over the seat and got the video camera, but eventually we got that thing overturned. That officer and his partner were allowed to leave the PD force. It was Downey PD in Southern California to pursue other employment options. But what happens is that when things like this occur, if you know the truth can set you free. They had asked apparently for help with counsel also, didn't want the state's, the city's attorney, at that juncture, I stood up and asked, you know, and I was at the trial, and I stood up and asked, I says, Your Honor, this person doesn't want a bar. They want their constitutional privilege for the assistance of counsel. And the judge says, well, they can be represented by whoever they – I says, Your Honor, please correct me if I'm wrong, but ask both the husband and the wife, do they want representation under the California law, the bar, or do they want the assistance of counsel as prescribed to them as a – in this case, it is an inalienable right to have the assistance of counsel as prescribed by the Sixth Amendment. And when I said that, the judge had the most stark look on his face, and it was just unbelievable. He looked at – he says, who are you, kid? And by this time, that young kid was 18 and a half years old, almost 19, and he had just gotten out of the Air Force. And the judge says, and you're appearing amicus curiae? And I says, yes, Your Honor, because – correct me if I'm wrong, but it would be the court committing that felony of deprivation of deprivation of rights under color of law, and Your Honor, I need you to be on the bench to hear my case. And he looked at me and he laughed. He laughed almost. It was hilarious laugh. And he says, I can't believe you, kid. You know. And he says, well, Your Honor, just the facts, man. Just the facts. You know, and everybody in the court was dead quiet, and he looked at me, he glared at me, he says, okay, kid, we'll go with it. And he says, you guys want assistance of counsel? You want a continuance? How long you want to continue so you can find somebody to help you? And he says, well, we need a couple of days. And I looked at the judge. He says, how about if I give you 90 days? We'll give you a 90-day continuance. And he says, well, you know, and they looked back at me, and I nodded yes. He says, Your Honor, we'll take that. You know, so what happened was that knowing the truth, we were able to help set some others free. When you log onto the Internet, take a look there and look up, type in etymology of the Bar Association. Type in etymology of an attorney, etymology of the profession lawyer. Look, most of those are not improperly colored and are not the not yellow journalism. when we're looking at 18 U.S.C. 241 and 242, you know, the threatened use of dangerous weapons, explosive or fire, if that law enforcement official has a gun, a sidearm, it's safe to assume that if you were to attempt to resist arrest, they would use that over a taillight violation. And yes, and I used to use the O word liberally, and this 63-year-old little old lady from, of all places, Brentwood, California, not Pasadena, and she was there, and she says, she was, Sonny, you're going to, I'm going to, you know, and she was railing on the judge, and this judge was in his 40s, and she was half again his age, you know, and I was half the judge's age at the time, and a third of her age, but they were, you know, and I raised my hand, and I had a paper copy of 18 U.S.C. 241 at the time, and I read that, and I said, you know, and the judge was getting really impatient, and he, and I was actually there for the person that was next in line after her, but she said, that young idiot, and she called the officer a young idiot, and he shouldn't have done that. You know, don't call names. Don't be discriminatory like that. But she did. Her license plate only had one fastener remaining in it and was falling off, falling down. And it was turned sideways. It was the bottom, and they had a picture of it there at the bottom right-hand fastener. So the plate was actually falling down and turned sideways, and the officer wrote her a ticket for it to get it refastened. And she says, I'm not accepting that. My license plate's still on there, and you can still read it, Sonny. And she's quoting all this in court. And the judge says, but he says, you're being charged with resisting arrest. She says, what was the arrestable crime? And she was so good, you know, and says, Sonny, you produce an arrestable crime and we'll talk about this. But otherwise, I'm demanding you dismiss this. Turns out that her husband of almost 40 years that had just passed away did practice law in Southern California and was very sharp, and that she worked, she was a law clerk at the same law firm that he worked at when they met. And she helped finish his law degree up, and she was just as sharp as a tack and squeezed a kitten when she wanted to. But she was saying, you produce an arrestable, well, you're being charged with resisting arrest. How do you plead? She says, I can't plead. There was no arrestable crime to be charged with. How can I be charged with resisting arrest? You can't arrest somebody for a fix-it ticket, she says, you know. And she's arguing. And at that juncture with the judge, we ended up, I asked him, you know, and I raised my hand and I stood up for her. And it, I says, Your Honor, would this be considered? She was taken to jail, handcuffed. And I says, would it be considered? And I asked him, what is the statute for unlawful arrest? He says, well, it's simple. There isn't one. The prosecuting attorney said there isn't one. And so what happened was that I says, yeah, it's kidnapping under color of law. And the officer is also guilty of that. And that's a second-degree federal felony. And I'm certain that she might consider not filing criminal federal charges against all three of you if this case was to be dismissed and she was apologized to. And he says, kid, you better get out of my courtroom. And she says, not so fast, Sonny. And she's 63 years old. She says, calls the judge, not so fast, Sonny. She says, he's exactly right. He says, and she says, I've got 40 witnesses here to say that you guys just, and the judge looked at the prosecutor and they, he says, does the state have a motion to dismiss? And, is the officer willing to apologize? And the officer stood up, but Your Honor, I says, she's got a point. And, the officer right over there permission to get to approach the defendant, Your Honor. He goes, that's highly irregular, but I'll prove it. And my bailiff's going to be watching you. He walked over and says, ma'am, I apologize for detaining you. It was wrong. I'm sorry. Can you forgive me? And this guy, I thought this guy had just come to Jesus or something, but he says, and the prosecutor, the state moves to dismiss, Your Honor. He says, well, then I have to move to dismiss too. Are you happy with that? And he called her young lady at the time, and he says, are you happy with that young lady? And he says, what about you, sir? Are you happy with that? And he says, by the way, what are you doing here? And would you believe assistance of counsel? And he goes, and he said, holy shaving cream from the bench. He used a literal vernacular. Later on, I made it clear that it was I didn't realize the person that would be called next was the one that I was being there for. But assistance of counsel, very, very valuable, very important. If for nothing else, if you're going in just to fight a traffic ticket that you have on your own, consider the possibility that a second set of eyes and ears that may have read a little bit of law, take that assistance of counsel with you. And make it clear to the judge, Your Honor, I am not seeking to be represented by anybody that is not covered under the Constitution that is absolutely not covered under my constitutional right. Actually, it's a U.S. Supreme Court ruling from 1964 that covers a representation, not assistance of counsel. But this person is under my right for assistance of counsel, and that's why they're here. With that, I've run over. Please forgive me. I want to thank you for the honor and the privilege of being able to share with you all this evening. We're going to open it up to now is time we open it up for Q&A. If you have questions that you wish to bring forth, if you can stay on the subject matter topic, that is more helpful to bolster and help secure the learning from the subject matter this evening. However, if you have even an off topic, we'll accept that. And with that, thank you. Back to you, Martin, and back to you, Michael.
All right. Can you hear me, John?
Yes, I can.
All right. Real good. So I'm press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2 to raise your hand on a board that I'm looking at. A little hand pops up next to your name when you press star 2, and we'll take you in the order of appearance. And then also you on Freedoms Radio, you will see a place where you can type in a question and or comment, and then underneath that you have another place to put in your name and some other information, if you do so, please. Once you've done that, hit the submit key. And when you do that, I will see you pop up on my end, and I will be happy to lend my voice to your comment or your question. Furthermore, let me start off by the first one having a question. John, when you have a student that you are accompanying in a court setting, the litigation in the courtroom, and the judge refuses allow the defendant in error to have assistance of counsel, is that not two parties that have been offended? There's the one asking for assistance of counsel and the one agreeing to have assistance of counsel or provide it. Wouldn't that be two complaints under Title 42?
You have a good point there. I choose, because of the laws in 42 states the illegal laws, unconstitutional laws regarding commerce and having a license to commit commerce in their state, meaning a license to learn a living, which is unconstitutional. I choose never to exercise that because it clouds the issue of their representation, and they usually try to say, well, you're working as an attorney, and this is, and what happens is that if we're ready to fight that battle, okay, so be it. And right now, if we're just trying to get some resolution for the student, that know that most of the time I don't appear with students. There's a few lately that I still do. I try to educate the students so that they can appear themselves and they can appear on their own behalf. If I'm the keeper of the clues and I know all the answers and I just hold on to that, that's like the old story about giving a man a fish, then you fed a man for a day. But if you teach a man to fish, or a woman, Jennifer Sue, if you teach them to fish, how to fish, then we fed them for life. And so as much as possible, I find that it's much wiser to educate the student so that they know what they're talking about, so that even if I do end up appearing with them, I never appear for them. I will not appear and represent anybody.
Of course.
I have had the request to do so, and I have shown up in court with a power of attorney saying, and I told them, I says, look, this person asked me to be their assistant of counsel. They're not able to be here. I am not representing them. Although they say that in this letter and this affidavit that this is power of attorney, they say that. Technically, I'm not. I'm just here to assist them, and they're in the hospital. And the last time it happened, she was in the hospital giving birth, of all things. And some of the nerve of some of these ladies decide to have a child when they're supposed to go to court. I do not think that that it's wise or skillful to abdicate one's right to represent themselves and to do it with another person and send a person in there to represent themselves without the assistance of counsel, meaning a second set of eyes and somebody else that can also give them ideas. So they, if they get overly burdened with, and they're not able to think on their feet as good as they could, that they have somebody there to comfort, support them, and point out important issues. So yes, you're right. There are two offended at this juncture. Depriving that individual their rights, that's the critical one that needs to be addressed, in my
sure.
mind.
Yeah, and it wouldn't hurt, I wouldn't think, to say that as a friend of the court, Your Honor, not only have you possibly injured the defendant in error here by not allowing him his Sixth Amendment right of counsel, but theoretically you've also offended the party that is interested in being the Sixth Amendment counsel. Anyways, just saying something like that. I'm not saying necessarily going through with it. Now, you brought up another very important term that I am a stickler on, and we've had this discussion once, maybe twice before, over the last couple of years on these calls. And the difference is between the word presenting oneself and representing oneself. You see, anytime I hear representing oneself, that means that there are two parties there. And always in a courtroom.
And one of those parties has to be incapacitated. That's why they're being represented.
Exactly. So, you know, if you step forward, sui juris, you know, the court might say pro se, it was incorrect records. But if you step forward by yourself, you're not representing yourself because you're presenting yourself. Exactly. And
yes, very, very important. Actually, your point is much stronger than you make it, Michael. The individual, if you say I represent myself, this goes back to the discussion about the attorney who represents himself as a fool for a client. You're
right.
Saying that you have a fool for a client.
Exactly.
But if you present yourself, and as you so graciously and carefully, skillfully pointed out, as suri juris, that means, or in pro per, in proper person, meaning that I have standing to represent myself. I'm not mentally incompetent. I have suffered no legal disabilities or physical or mental disabilities, that I'm here, that I can represent myself. That's very, very good, very important.
That I can present myself.
That you can present yourself. Absolutely.
Right.
Sick 'em doggy.
All right. So, again, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. I don't see anybody raising your hands. We have a good crowd tonight, John, blessedly.
Okay.
And so, you know, let's step up with some bravery here. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. And let me check Freedom's Radio real quick, see if I can't come up with another question or so, because I'd hate to say goodnight to John when he...
Now, next week I may be out of pocket, but if in spite of what's happening, I'm trying to make arrangements so that after I get done with that that procedure, that I'm going to see if I can still do class next week.
Okay. Does that procedure have to do anything with being a poll watcher, or are you talking about surgery?
Oh. This one's surgery. Right now, I have to go in tomorrow to the prosecutor's office to do a follow up on that, and we're trying to see if we can get some criminal prosecution on some people that have done some very, very bad things in this last election, and actually. Maybe next week or the following week, we'll do a class on election fraud. And and that one I would encourage anybody and everybody to come to that that class. And if you have family, friends, brothers, sisters, please come to that class. And because if for nothing else, if you can work as a poll watcher during a special or a general election or a midterm, please. There are a few things that an American can do that are very important with maintaining liberty in America. One of them is clearly vote. Let your voice be heard. And over the last 34 years, I've worked either as a poll watcher or a primary judge in the elections for every midterm, special, and general election since 1990. And as part of that. And I tell people, some people ask me, well, how do you vote on this? I says, well, if you would have asked me before 6:59 this morning or after 7:01 p.m. this evening, I have an opinion. But in the meantime, during the day, I've set my hours aside to help make certain that your voice is heard. And I donate my time to work and support your right to be heard, regardless of whether you would vote for something that I would spend a lifetime advocating against. This, and I tell them, this is complex citizenship in this country. Learning that this, the right to defend somebody's right to stand on that soapbox in the middle of the park and speak something that you would advocate against a lifetime, that's now you're truly starting to become a citizen. And being a poll watcher helps ensure that that occurs. The next thing is jury duty. Now, if you vote, praise the king, you know, that recognize you up to that intelligent designer. If you're called to serve on a jury, this is your chance to be a judge for a day or a month or a week or whatever that, how long that trial is. Now there's not one judge, there's 12. And with the alternates, there's two spares in case somebody gets disqualified or gets sick or decides to have a baby, which is also one of the most wonderful things you can do as an American, as procreate. Vote, serve on a jury, and then if you can work as a poll watcher to help others' voices be heard, hey, now, or a primary judge or an alternate judge or just even an election clerk, but working at the polls, very, very important, and letting your voice be heard. And I'm going to tell you, I was at a meeting last night where we were meeting with judges and election clerks and poll watchers and everything from this most recent special and general election, and you would not believe the difference one person can make at stemming the tide of evil. And the bad guys don't like it when you show up and they pull Periscope down and they're not very active. And I listened to a judge say, holy shaving cream, don't send them here. I've got a GD poll watcher here. You know, that's not my problem. Send them somewhere. I don't care if this is the only place. This is the only place you're not sending them. And she said on the phone, and I could hear this all the way down the hall, GD, I am not going to jail today. You send them somewhere else.
Really?
Just the presence of a poll watcher. I also heard one time say, you kidding? There's too many clerks from the other party here. You don't dare send them here. That was 8 years ago I heard that one. But,
yeah.
You know, so making a difference. And, by the way, there's something called Grass Fire Communications that I would encourage everyone here to participate in. It's something that's being worked on and produced by Americans Restoring America and by Michael himself. And you have no idea the tools that I wish we would have had if we would have had Grass Fire Communications fully implemented for this election. There was some of the cases that we were going over in last night's meeting are just unbelievable. And I wished, I was sitting there thinking to myself, I wish Grass Fire was already in place, because we could have sent some people to jail and sent some messages. And while maintaining people's anonymity and not violating their anonymity on the vote, because it's against the law to in any way, shape, or form propagate information whether a person did or didn't vote and or how they voted. Except that Grass Fire Communications, if you have only 10 registered voters in this precinct and they and there's 4 for one party and 6 for the other party, and all of a sudden there's 12 votes for one party, or there's 8 votes and the for one party and 4 of the individuals know that they voted for the other party, then you can reach out through Grass Fire Communications, ask them if they'd be willing to author an affidavit stating who they voted for on that ticket. And when you have affidavits that X amount of people more than turned out on the actual count show up, that is unequivocally prosecutable. And I'm going to tell you something. Not that I have ever met or have any association with anything at Parts East or on the Hill, and I've had individuals, since this election, I've had an oversight committee call and wanted to know where it was happening, and I brought up Grass Fire Communications, and they said that if we would have had that in place, that they could have shut a whole handful of folks down. And whether I do or don't serve on any election fraud task force or committees that report to the Hill or to the Senate, I that's completely irrelevant. The relevancy is that before the next midterm, we need to get grass fire communications fully implemented so that the bad guys can't get away. With that, back to you, Michael.
Yeah, we have Brad. We have Brad from Crystal River. A little background here. I spoke with Brad for the first time in a long, long, long time from last week. He is a student of GW and has gone through the process of correcting his political citizenship status. I encouraged him to be on these other calls in that because there's so much more to offer under the tent, if you want, at your remedies in the law. So Brad has raised his hand. Let's see what Brad's got to say.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I hear you just fine.
Brad.
Thank you, Brad.
Well, I was about to hang up because I didn't get a response last night. I raised my hand a couple of times and nothing happened. So my question may be off topic, but since nobody else seems to want to question, I'd like to take the opportunity here. So Friday morning, about 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the morning, I was driving on I-75 here in Florida, and I got stopped. And it was a deputy, sheriff's deputy, very direct guy. I had my passport behind my seat, and we had cargo. And I did, just the way this guy acted, I didn't want to open my door, open any can of worms that way. So he asked, all he asked for was my driver's license, so I handed it to him. It took about 2 minutes. He came back, gave me a citation, and drove off. So what I did, I have studied David Strait, and so I went back and found what he said he did for traffic tickets. And so I took the ticket, and with a red marker, did, you know, what he did. You're off the contract. It's not accepted while traveling in private. You know the spiel. And I sent that in this morning. And I have serious doubts that they're just going to say, oh, okay, file it away and not try to come back to me about something.
Brad, what did he stop you for? May I ask?
Yeah, speeding. 90 and a 70.
90 and a 70? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Most of 75 is posted 70, isn't it?
Yes.
Now, did you give him your Florida DL also?
Yes, I had that, and that's what I gave him, a driver's license. I did not, in order for me, the way he was acting, he was very nervous, extremely military-like, very direct. I didn't want to reach behind the seat and grab my passport. And also, I had read a webpage called Police One, where some professor had written a long dissertation on, I think the title was something like state nationals, the latest sovereign citizen, be prepared to stop a state national, so I'm thinking, the cops, they're ready for this, and they're probably training to counter if you give them, the passport. So I just gave them the driver's license, and that was all.
Brad, would you like to know what I would have done or what I have done, what I've done in the past? Would you like to hear that?
I would.
Okay. my most recent stop was for doing 68 in a 40. And which is automatically, that's theoretically it bumps up to a misdemeanor because it's 25 over. And it was 28. Now, I thought I was in a 55 zone, and I was certain that I was in a 55 zone, and I believed I was in a 55 zone. And I was kind of going the flow of traffic, and I was a little more than the flow of traffic. So I thought, well, they're doing 60. That's probably okay. And the speedometer in the vehicle I was in died that morning. So I didn't have a clue what I was really doing. And what happened was is when I get pulled over,
can you repeat who died again?
Pardon?
Who died or what died?
My speedometer.
Oh,
my
okay.
Speedo,
okay, I'm sorry.
My speedometer quit working that morning. The whole gauge cluster quit working about 2 hours earlier, and so I didn't have a clue what I was really doing for. And I'm in a van and I'm kind of elevated and what I did was I after he turned the lights on, I reached down, got my wallet, and got it out and. Put it on the dash, and I rolled the windows down as I came to a stop, and I took my keys out, and I tossed them up in the windshield, and I put my hands at 10 and 2 on the steering wheel, so that verifiably non-belligerent,
Right.
And he walks up to me, he says, do you know how fast you're going? He says, or do you know, he says, do you know why I stopped you? I says, no, officer, I didn't, and I was very kind about it. I says, and he goes, well, let me see your driver's license and your insurance. And I says, my wallet is up there in the dash next to my keys. Is it okay if I reach up there and grab that? And my insurance is in the overhead here. Actually, it's in the dash over there. Is it okay if I lean over? And he says, yeah, and he kind of leaned into me, and so I kept one hand on the steering wheel, and I reached over with the right hand, and I dropped the dash, and I pulled the insurance certificate out, and I slammed the dash closed and passed it to him, and I says, I'm trying to find what I drive on. I'm having some trouble finding it. Here's some ID. It's some federal ID. And after about half a minute of let me see that federal ID. And I says, here, and I'm looking through real quick here. He says, I'll be right back. And he walked, and I haven't had a state driver's license for over 20 years. I've been to court many times about it, but he walked back. And he sat down in his cruiser and got up, and he says, were you able to find your license? I says, well, I'm trying to find what I drive on right now, and I'm having – and he says, I'll be right back. He gave me my insurance, and he sits down in his cruiser, and you can see he's working at his PDT there, the portable data terminal, and then he gets out, and he's talking on his cell phone and arguing back and forth, and all of a sudden he comes up and says, sir – the reason I was stopping you is you were doing 68, and this is a 40 zone, and could you please slow down a little bit? I apologize for stopping you. I guess you know that I can't cite you. And I says, and I smiled at him. I says, okay. He says, yeah, you knew I couldn't cite you. I want to thank you for protecting and serving, and he goes, if you had been going a little bit faster, I might have been able to cite you. I says, are you encouraging me to leave at an accelerated rate? And I laughed like that. He goes, no, don't think that for a second. He says, by the way, you're probably the kindest, most considerate stop that I've had in months or maybe even 2 years. He says, thank you for the dignity and respect you gave me. And he says, sir, I apologize for detaining you. Please accept my apologies, and you have a wonderful day. To this day, I have no idea what he looked up. And what I've done is that I have something called an IMQ, an International Motorist Qualification, that I drive on. And but let me ask you, Brad, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
We're going to pretend, we're going to role play for a moment, and I'm going to role play to you. You're going to be the judge, and we're going to pretend we're in court, and I've been charged with driving with no state driver's license. Okay? You ready?
Okay.
Okay.
I'm the judge?
Okay, and so you just got done reading the charge. John, you're being charged with no state driver's license. How do you plead? Well, Your Honor, I have a question. No, this isn't trial. Guilty, not guilty, or nulla contendere. This is, and well, I have a question, Your Honor. You know, and the last time it took over 3 minutes, and this judge was a black judge, female. She was in her 60s. She's younger than me. And she had been on that bench for over 20-some-odd years. And, you know, and finally she says, okay, what's your question? Well, is a license is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, correct? And she goes, well, of course it is. And both just ADAs, both assistant district attorneys, says, yes, Your Honor, we'll stipulate that it's permission to do so. You know, but can we get on with this? We're wasting time. You know, and the judge says, hold, will you two hold it? I'm asking the questions right now. You know, and okay, and I'm talking to him. Okay, I says, well, so does that mean if I don't have that driver's license, that I can't go to work on, drive to work on Monday or go to church on Sunday or go shopping on Wednesday night or Tuesday night, my son cuts his foot on a glass bottle, that I can't take him to the emergency room to save his life?
Mm-hmm.
And the judge was holding her gavel and she dropped it and it fell over the front of the bench. Okay,
uh-huh.
The clerk went to pick it up for him. And I says, would that, is the court aware of, 18 U.S.C. 242, deprivation of rights under color of law? And I says, would that be, if I don't have that license, is that, would that mean a deprivation of rights under color of law? And would the officer or the prosecutor or the court be committing a felony in the second degree? You know, I'm just asking, just for clarification, Your Honor. And she looked at me and she leaned back in her chair and goes, And one of the prosecutors says, she was, she started objecting. She says, you know what, hold on. She says, can you put a cork in it? I'm talking to him right now. And, I didn't know this, but somebody that I had met downstairs when I was coming in, a federal marshal of all people, had bought a friend to come and see, because I told him I was there for a no Texas driver. He said, oh, just pay the ticket, you know, and get it dismissed, you know. And he says, why are you here? Why are you going to try to fight it? And I told him the whole thing, and he said, I want to hear that. And next thing I know, I didn't know he was standing behind me. But she says, you know, I could find you in contempt. I says, but you're not, because you know this is correct, and you if a federal marshal witnessed you doing that, they would have to arrest you and detain you immediately. And they're the ones that are supposed to detain, the only one that can detain a sitting judge. And she says, and she started stuttering, and I didn't realize that the federal marshal was standing behind me with his friend, and his friend had his jacket partly hanging open, and you could see his badge. So it's like, holy kitty litter, Batman. But and she goes, does the state have a motion here? And the officer, he's just snickering the whole time. Because I, you know, when he pulled me over and I had no Texas driver's license, the reason I was getting stopped actually wasn't because I committed something wrong, because somebody hit me. They intentionally tried to ram me, and but he says, you know, and he says, well, what do you drive on? You've been living here more than 6 months. I says, yeah. He says, you know, you're required by law. And I asked him, I says, well, what is a license? Is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal? And he goes, yeah, you know. And I did the 18 U.S.C. 242 thing with him, and he goes, well, okay, I understand. I says, so would that be you committing a felony? You know, if I can't, you know, if you're going to arrest me for no Texas driver's license, he says, definitely not going to arrest you. He says, but could I, he says, would it be okay if I gave you a ticket? Because, you know, this thing, And I didn't know that a whole bunch of people had witnessed this lady trying to hit me on the freeway, and that I had dodged her three times before she finally cut me off and had a tire rub on the fender, and on her fender. I didn't know that they had a bunch of calls, 911 calls. And he says, if they find out that you didn't have a Texas driver's license and I didn't cite you, they could, I says, go ahead, write me, I'm honored, and please accept whatever ticket you write me. You know, and we finished talking about it. He says, I want to be there in court. He says, I was thinking about not showing up just so you get it dismissed. But he says, would it be okay if I'm there to, I says, absolutely, come on down. And he says, he's laughing the whole time because we recounted everything that I talked to him, to the judge. And finally, the prosecutor says the state moves to dismiss, and she's about to bang her gavel, and I raised my hand, and I says, Your Honor? She says, what is it? She says, you know, you're really turning into a pain in the ice. You know, she used a little vernacular. And I says, Your Honor, you're just summarily dismissing my ticket for no state driver's license. Does that mean that you're going to dismiss everybody else's in the court today? She says, you really are being a pain in the ice, you know, and she says, okay, who in this court? And there was over 200 people in the courtroom. Three courtrooms were shut down for remodeling that day. And she says, okay, who has no Texas driver's license on there? And over half the people, she says, raise your hand. Okay, now, how many of you, and there was over 100. And how many of you, that's the only thing on your ticket, stand up? And about half of them stood up. And she says, okay, everybody, with your hands raised, you come over here. And once standing up, you come over here. Because the ones with your hands raised, you got something else there. We're just going to dismiss this one ticket, this one charge. And the rest, and we're going to take a 10 or 15 minute recess. And the clerk slaps her hand on the desk and says, Your Honor, what is it? You kidding? This is 40 or 50 people each way. It's gonna take at least half an hour to dismiss, to go through all these. He says, okay, the court's on recess for half an hour. Okay. And that's when I unlocked the brake, and then she goes, dismissed. And I unlocked the brakes in my wheelchair, and I started to turn around, and that federal marshal was standing there with his friend, and they're both snickering. And I says, why are we snickering? He says, I told him what you said you were going to tell me. I couldn't believe it. You told the judge, how long have you been here? Well, we heard almost the whole thing, you know. And Frank says, this is Jim. He's my partner. I just, both ADAs were watching, and they thought that these were close personal friends of mine. And Frank kind of slapped me on the shoulder, and James, you know, shook my hand, and they took off. And I'm putting my little file back together, and the female ADA says, you weren't really going to have us arrested, were you? And I'm, you know, and I, you know, the male ADA turns around and says, yeah, were you going to have us? I says, look, if you guys work for me, you were trying to do the best job you could, the best way you knew how, as honorably as you knew how, right? And they both agreed. And I says, you know, if you work for me, would it be right to take somebody that works, and all of a sudden this hand sits on my right shoulder. It's the judge. She took her gown off, and it's laying on top of the high back chair behind the thing. And she's standing right behind me, with her hand on my shoulder, and it's like I'm thinking to myself, holy kitty litter, Batman, you know. And she says, so you know Frank and James? I says, know who? And, you know, and I kind of smirked a little bit, and she started to laugh. And she says, I says, but, you know, and the ADA says, well, answer my question. And says, I said, no, if you guys are trying to do the best job you could, the best way you know how, and there was something wrong with it, there was a mistake. Is it right for an employer to beat his employees over the head or browbeat them or, you know, swat them or, you know, wait a minute. That's right. This is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. You do work for me. See, but now you know what's right, and that's never going to happen ever again in this courtroom, correct? You know, and And I says, correct. So I would not need to call Frank or James back, right? And they go, and the guy says, yeah, right. And he elbowed the lady, and she says, oh, yeah, right, right. And the judge patted me on the shoulder again, and I turned around. She says, was there anything else you were going to quote me while I was up there? I says, you mean Smith versus State 90 and Meyer versus State 92? And she started laughing, and she says, I knew it. I knew you knew. Those are the two state Supreme Court rulings that say that you're not required to have a Texas driver's license unless you're operating commercially. You know, and she started laughing. She says, so what do you drive on? And the officer, you know, stepped in and says, show him your IMQ. She says, you have an IMQ? The judge is saying this. And she says, I've been waiting to see one of these. You know, pull it out. I pulled it out, and she's passing around. And, hey, you know, ADAs, look at this, IMQ, IMQ, IMQ. He says, and I says, but technically, we don't need that, do we? And there isn't really a reason to have anything, you know, to even to do with that, is there? And the judge just smirked and smiled and laughed. And about 4 or 6 weeks later, I was down at the same courthouse, and I'm confined to a wheelchair most of the time. And I was pushing across the parking lot in my wheelchair, and the bailiff and the clerk, and one of the clerks that were in that courtroom come running up to me, Mr. Fiala, you know, and they were, you know, you stop for a second, you know, and okay. And we talked, and she says, you don't know what you've done. And I says, and I'm thinking to myself, uh-oh, you know, this is not a good thing. And the bailiff says, I've been serving in this court, and a big black guy, huge, you know, 6'37", kind of tall, just huge hands. You know, I mean, this guy, he could have been a piece of construction equipment. He's so big, you know. And he says, I've been working for this judge for 22 years, and I've never seen her smile in court. I've never seen her smile ever, even in chambers. And the clerk says, I've been working for 26 years. You know, and never, and she laughed, and she hasn't convicted anybody of no Texas driver's license. And the bail says, well, yeah, there's been a couple, but, and she, and the clerk says, oh, yeah, but that was extenuating circumstances. But she said, do you know that most of the judges now here don't, the officers are, they're coming in, and the judge says, don't bring me a no Texas driver's license unless you got an awful good reason. Don't just summarily write that one. And that was quite a few years ago. And about 2 years later, I was at the same court building, and one of the clerks caught me and says, you know, she's retiring on December 31st, and she's been a dream to work with and work for, and ever since you were here, you know, they, you changed that whole courtroom for life. And, and they said she smiles every day now and she greets us. I says, wow, she never greeted you before? You know, and it was, but you see what's happening? There are, for those who seek to serve that intelligent designer, there are no accidents. And, I had a chance to make a difference in one court, you know, in one person's life, and it spread to a lot of people. And so to that end, I don't know what you have waiting for you. Are you the type of person that seeks to, that respects that intelligent designer out there, Brad?
Well, yes, absolutely.
Well, there are no accidents, and that intelligent designer may have a mission for you. Keep me posted. If something is going to slow us down or hinder us, that intelligent designer, the harder we work to serve him, the more he keeps the unneeded interruptions and stumbling blocks out of our path. So, you know, the harder you work to serve him, the more that happens, you know he's approved it and that there's a plan behind it. Just seek to find out what that plan is. Maybe he's got an opportunity for you to be an asset and a blessing for his glory.
Well taken. Thank you. And this is Brother John, right? Is that
yep.
speaking? Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, you've done the soup to nuts with GW, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. GW will probably tell you also that, you know, if something like this is happening to you, it's especially to a servant of the Most High King, there's the king has something in going, and he and GW will be one of the first to tell you, figure out what the boss wants done. You know, GW, I, Michael, we all, everybody, the whole team works at eliminating unnecessary entanglements and things that use up our hours, minutes, and seconds in our passbook account of life unnecessarily. That's what we're trying to do, is remove those enslavements. So what that means is that the rest of them, they're real missions. Fulfill your mission.
Well taken. Thank you.
The next time you chat with GW, just tell him that the tall, funny-looking guy in the lime green wheelchair said hi.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Back to you, Martin. Back to you, Michael.
All right. Thank you so much, Brad. We appreciate you. Next is Jennifer Sue. How do you do?
Uh-huh.
Well, hello there, Michael and Martin and Brother John.
Hey, young lady. How you doing?
Older Brother John.
What's the use of that old word? You know, we're gonna find a bar of soap here. and I can call you young lady because I know how old you are, or how young you are. I'm not gonna use the old word either. So how may I be an asset or a blessing for you, young lady?
Well, I'm just wondering whether I should or shouldn't, and if I should, how to sort of go about, like I went to the tax grievance day at the county. I might have spoken to you before, but I've forgotten. And anyway, I found out later on, I asked for a FOIA request to find out whether everyone was, had their oaths of office on file and their bond insurance. And anyway, a couple of months later, I got the oaths of office, certified oaths of office in the mail, dated that day or the day before, which was way months after the day that I went for the grievance, which means they did not have their oaths of office when they were pretending to be working for the government. And in New York, it says you have to have your oath of office, even if you're an appointed person, not an elected person. Both have to have the oath of office. And the oaths of office were to the corporate United States and Constitution, and not obviously the Republic Constitution. And so I'm just wondering what to do with that information.
Okay. We need to find out if there was a previous oath of office that might have still been intact. At that juncture, then what we do is we do a motion to void judgment based on no oath of office. The individual was not legally allowed to hear the case.
Right.
Go back to the same folks that you just got this information from and just say, hey, I need to confirm if there was an oath of office in effect. And just be honest and straightforward. Just tell them, hey, look, the oath of office is required for an individual to serve, and if they don't have their oath of office, and then that individual doesn't legally qualify. And so right now at this juncture, I need to find out, please, and you're the only person that can help me tell them that. And remind them that Article 6, Paragraph 3 of the Constitution, you know, A6P3, okay? You know, make a note, Jennifer, okay? Article 6, Paragraph 3. And it says, the senators and representatives before mentioned, the members of the several state legislatures, all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by an oath or affirmation to support this Constitution, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification of any office or public trust on the United States. So, Article 6, this is not the Bill of Rights. This is the Constitution itself. So it's articles, not amendment. Okay? Article 6, Paragraph 2. It also says, and the judges of every state should be bound by thereby anything in the Constitution or laws of the state, contrary notwithstanding. So for them to adjudicate, it says, the judicial officers of both the United States and the several states, just ART 6, paragraph P3, you know, P2 and P3. And reread those tonight. If you need it, Michael has a copy of the Constitution that has that certain highlights, and he can send one out to you. If you've got any question at all, I tell you what, Michael, I'm going to go ahead and send you an email that has the latest highlights on it that I've done, and let's see, Constitution with highlights. Here we are, and so that you can send this out to Jennifer Sue. Hold on a second.
Can I talk while you're thinking?
Yes. Yes, go ahead, please.
Well, I'm just wondering what, if their judgment is voided, what would happen after that? Because they shouldn't be allowed to do that job again because they've done something illegally, pretty much. There was also at least 30 other people in the room on that day. I'm just wondering, do I then have to wait till the next set of people are appointed, and then they make a decision, or what would follow?
I'm still waiting for that clerk to get back to me. She had some comments, and she said she didn't want to unnecessarily talk outside of class, but she said she thinks she may have something that we can do that the response back on that. Chase, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now, by the way, the oath of office, is that dealing with Chase?
No, it's dealing with the land taxes. On the land. Like it was tax even today.
Okay. Excuse me, I misunderstood. That the oath of office still applies on that. Now, the taxes, the land is currently in a charitable religious trust, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I I'm a little tuckered. I'm a little worn out tonight, and I'm starting to brain fog in. Have you filed for religious paperwork for the charitable religious trust that's holding it? Now you have a 575 that has an E suffix after it, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, and that E suffix is what's real critical on the CP 575.
Right.
Okay. The property is wholly owned by the CRT. Are you the trustee or somebody else?
The corporation's soul is.
The corporation's soul, okay, is the trustee, okay. We need to refile that paperwork with the tax office to have that recognized as a charitable religious trust, and we need to have it filed so it goes back to the date that you transferred it into the CRT.
Okay, well, I know you're tired now, so can I ask you how to do that some other day?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, here's your homework for the night, okay?
Uh-huh.
Log on to the appraisal district website and pull down the paperwork, the forms for applying for not-for-profit status. And I hate to use the word 501c3 because we're doing Chapter 508, but their paperwork will be 501. Most of them don't have the paperwork for the 508. They don't list
and
508
that's okay,
in the paperwork.
John, that's okay because 508 is under 501.
Yes, it is. That's exactly why it's okay. Michael's point is stronger than he makes it. But in the meantime, get the paperwork pulled down to do 501c3, okay?
So what do you mean, appraisal district website? What is that?
In New York, I'm trying to remember what the taxing authority is called in there, the tax office.
You mean for my Mamakating town council, you know, like website, the town website, or New York State?
Okay, I think it's called the Department of Taxation and Finance. I'm trying to.
For the New York State, you mean?
Yeah. Now, yeah, because you're in New York, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, it's Department of Taxation and Finance. I'm looking it up right now. It says right up front here, those properties owned by religious organizations or governments are completely exempt from paying property tax. Others are partially exempt, such as veterans who qualify for exemption, homeowners eligible for school tax relief program. Okay, but it looks like, let's see here, and there's exemptions with people with disabilities. Yeah, let's see here. And it says though all the properties are assessed, some owned by religious organizations or governments are completely exempt from paying property tax. Now, by the way, you and I talked about, setting up a Save the Kitten Foundation or, you know, et cetera, you know, or doing a meal, a
yes.
homeless shelter meal a year or a month. Kind of thing and make donations to You need to start something like that as quickly as possible. Okay.
I just couldn't I couldn't think of a name.
But by the way, that clerk, she asked me if you had checked to see if that judge's oath of office was intact when he was hearing your case.
I haven't.
So you haven't. You haven't checked that yet?
No, did I do that too? Yeah.
And she asked me to ask you to check that.
Okay.
So, I'm on the Department of Taxation and Finance website right now, and Assessor's Manuals Exempt Administration Part 1 Subject Index. Let's see here. I'm looking to see if they've got the charitable organization. Mandatory class. Okay. Here it is. Let's see. I'm going to send a link to Michael that I think has the chapter, paragraph, and verse that you're going to be looking for. On this one, try to see if this has what we're looking for in it, and let's see here. Okay, and did you get that other one that I sent over, Michael?
I had to unmute, sorry. I sent something to Jennifer Sue just a moment ago.
Okay, that was the Constitution with the highlights? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good, good, good. Okay. Jennifer, there's this Constitution markup that you'll be seeing is kind of a marked up bit copy thing there. But in just a moment, Michael will send you a link that you should be able to get to the page. Tomorrow's going to be a very busy day for me. Let's look at Thursday. See if you can give me a call on Thursday and see if you found the forms. Let's go from there, okay?
Okay. Thank you. I just want to mention that my trust and the corporation soul, I have letters for both of them from the IRS with my Texas address from when I was there and my New York State address, all of it saying that there's no tax obligations for either entity.
Excellent. Okay,
yeah.
And now remember, you have a part of your homework is also checking on the Chase judge to make sure his oath of office was intact.
Yes, I will definitely do that.
Okay. You go, girl. Anything else
Thank
we could do to be an asset or a blessing for you?
Oh, you could just tell the other fellow, I think it was Brad, was it? I have had two tickets and used my passport card to get out of them. You know, after I went to the court once each for each one, but I filed paperwork and ended up the cases were dismissed. So I just wanted him to know that. I didn't even have an up-to-date license the second time, although I did the first time. But they didn't say anything about me not having a license the second time. They just did the speeding. And she couldn't swipe the card because she didn't have a machine in her car. Anyone there?
You still there, Jennifer? Yeah.
Oh,
I don't know what happened.
Somehow
I got disconnected and I had to re-log back in.
Did Mike hear or did anyone else hear?
Mike,
I heard you.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, what Jennifer just said, John, what Jennifer just was sharing with Brad was that she has had two speeding tickets. And when I asked her one time, why'd you do that? She says, well, I can.
I wanted to find out if it would really work being in that.
That is so way wrong. That is so way wrong. Don't do that. I count on the Most High King's grace to protect all of the students. And you know what? And Michael and I are, familiar with one student. He got a little, shall we say, overweeningly, egotistically prideful. And he was going to go prove that, et cetera, who he was. And he went out and he knew where the cop was and he drove and got himself stopped. And holy kitty there, Batman, the father showed him a new definition of being obedient.
No, I wasn't doing it in an egotistical way. I was doing it because I wanted to find out whether everything that you and Michael and DW and everyone said was actually correct. And I found out it was.
Well, there have been some exceptions where people, I don't encourage that. The times that I've shared about, I have never intentionally colored outside the lines. But the times I shared about, like this last stop that I just got, oh, holy kitty litter, Batman, that was, Johnny did a boo-boo, and Johnny screwed up, and Johnny wasn't paying attention, and Johnny was driving with his head in the trunk instead of on his shoulders in front, And so, let's not tempt the Most High King, because I think when we're truly operating as American nationals, I believe that we're not just restoring America, but we're restoring our position before the Most High King. So he pays particular extra attention to that. So let's not tempt it.
The second time I didn't, I thought it was a 65, and because normally it was right at a exit, like into a, toilets and all that. And they were fixing the whole area, so I couldn't get off. So I went straight through, thinking it was still a 65 area, but it was a 55. And so that's why I was pulled over, because I didn't know I was going faster than I should have, because I normally stop there and then get on to the freeway again, but this time I just drove straight through. If you understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. Now, I'm gonna read you something real quick here. This is RPTL section 420, not-for-profit organizations. It's that link that I sent you. It's in the summary. Real property that, number one, is owned by a not-for-profit corporation or association or organized or conducted exclusively for one or more specific purposes, religious, education, charitable, hospital, moral or mental improvements for adults, or two, is used exclusively for carrying out one or more of these purposes, is wholly exempt from taxation and is exempt for certain purposes from special ad valorem taxes or special assessments. So, you need to be able to, when you submit this, if they say, well, what do you do? Show them whether, that you knitted a shawl together and you had a raffle that was $1 ticket that all of the proceeds, and you didn't even reimburse yourself the yarn for knitting the shawl, but all the proceeds were forwarded to this organization or that organization so that they could hold free dinner on Thanksgiving or New Year's or whatever. But get started on something that, you know, and if you have to go down to the resale shop and buy some clothing, or you buy you find a nice insulated jacket there or parka, say, hey, this insulated jacket or parka normally sells for $109 or $319, and we're raffling it off for $1. And these tickets are available at any of these five vendors or supermarket or wherever. And just go in the supermarket and tell them, hey, look, and go to the small ones. The big ones, they're not going to. But, you know, the corner ones, say, hey, look, make up a bunch of tickets, you know, that they can sell for a dollar a piece. And, you know, that and put on the bottom, hey, if you want to buy a ticket directly, send a check or money order in a SASE. You know what SASE means, self-addressed stamped envelope. To this mail thing, and we'll mail you a ticket back. And, show that you've got an infrastructure for doing kindness in the community and you're working on developing more. That's how you comply with this New York statute.
Okay.
Okay? Okay,
mm-hmm.
Girl?
Mm-hmm. All righty. Thank you.
Yeah, I had one other thing to add, if I may, with regards to being on the side of the road with a law enforcement officer, having presented the State Department identification, your pass card. I wouldn't necessarily mess with a passport, but just your pass card. If they're confused, if they come up with anything that indicates their lack of cooperating with you for processing it, or they come back and say, I can't read this machine, then I would say something kindly. Towards the end of it says, well, officer, before you write a ticket for me, could I encourage you, please, to contact your loss prevention office officer that I may speak with them before you write a ticket. And they may come back and say, well, why would you want to talk? I mean, you want to talk to my shift commander. And this is no. Your shift commander probably as much about the law as your shift commander does. It's your loss prevention officer that will understand what I would be sharing with them. Well, what would you be sharing with them? And he says, well, I'm hesitant to say to you what I'd be sharing with them, but if you asked, I'll give you an answer, is that I would be sharing with them that if I'm written a ticket, then, you know, within a very short order of time, before first appearance, I will have already filed a Title 42, 1983 lawsuit, a federal lawsuit against you for deprivation of rights under color of law. And I'm not expecting you to understand that, but the loss prevention officer would understand that. And then I'd also mention to the loss prevention officer that since we're having this conversation, I would also be including them in this deprivation of rights under color of law because they had the opportunity to communicate with you that you really shouldn't proceed under these circumstances. And I would have said something like that.
Well, I just said...
I'm waiting for John.
I just said, look, you can call the Department of State and find out that I'm not a U.S. citizen, I'm an American national, or you can call your boss and give him my number and tell him to swipe the card if you can't swipe it. But she just didn't, she just wanted to give me a speeding ticket and she didn't care about the license kind of thing. She said, I've got to go. I can't do anymore. So, you know,
I'm sorry.
Oh, I just didn't want to cause any tension.
Right. I'd love to get John to the place where there's kind of like a general template, for Title 42, 1983 that can be assigned to an individual circumstance so that always within just a couple of weeks of a traffic ticket that lawsuit is filed, that there's a case number listed, et cetera, so that it can be shared with the prosecutor, it can be shared with the chief judge of the district or the circuit that you're in at that time. Just let them know what's coming. It's, and, the law enforcement officer is always going to be the sacrificial lamb. He's going to be the point of the spear. He's the cannon fodder. But that's the way they set it up. It's not the way we would like it.
Well, I would say it's also whoever's teaching them, because they haven't taught them that there's more than one type of citizen or one type of person, you know, and there's other things they need to know. And so they weren't taught that, so it's the teacher's fault as well.
Well, yeah, again, once you understand that a curriculum is designed to arrive at a certain conclusion, that application runs not only with this particular instance like you're talking about, but the American Medical Association as well as the American Bar Association.
I know. Yeah. And even in kindergarten and public schools, everything.
Yep. Well, Jennifer Hsu, thank you so very much.
Thank you, John.
You take care, young lady. Back to you, Michael.
Yes, sir. Brad just popped himself back up here, so let's get a quick thing.
Well, Jennifer Hsu, don't go too far. We may bring you on with Brad. Go ahead, Brad.
I'm sorry. I had to step inside real quickly, and I came back, and I heard my name. And I tried to tune in, and I thought, you know, from what I heard, I was a little bit reprimanded, and
we're talking about you behind your back in front of your face here. Yeah. Using your name in vain again.
Yeah, listen, yeah. I didn't sleep real well last night because I knew I was going to mail that thing this morning, and it wasn't a matter of pride. It's just that everybody I've seen who has eventually come around to remedy, except for probably you guys, you and Greg Wolf, they all get put through the ringer. And through all this stuff, they, you know, finally find remedy and everything. And I kept thinking, I've got to get my feet wet. I've got to just get in there and do something. So I did the thing that I could find to do within 72 hours. So I did send that thing in. But what is this? Did you say Title 42, like some kind of lawsuit? And were you speaking to me also?
We're speaking to everybody. Have you ever heard of 18 U.S.C. 242 or 42 U.S.C. 1983?
Yeah, I used that in what I wrote on the ticket and sent back.
Okay. Okay. When they do not act in concert with your rights, technically they're in violation of your rights, and the federal statute for the criminal prosecution is 18 U.S.C. 242, and the federal statute for civil is 42 U.S.C.
1983.
Yeah. Hang on a second. I'll be right back.
Okay, and when he returns after he's completed with Brad, we're going to then go to Brother Daniel here in California, and then we'll wrap it up for the night. So let's.
I'm sorry. I thought I was through taking notes. I had to run back in and get a pen and paper.
It's all right.
I would like him to repeat that that code again.
Oh, I'll give it to you. It's 42.
Let me get the pen and. Okay, ready.
42 U.S.C., that's United States Code,
okay.
1983,
mm-hmm.
And the other one is 18 U.S.C., Section 242.
Okay, so 242. The 14 U.S.C. 1983, is that Title 42 U.S.C. 1983?
Yeah. That's it.
Okay. Got it.
All right. And then, of course, the very, very important, and this is something that I've shared with attorneys, and they tell me they've never heard of it before. Very, very important.
Yeah.
Let me get to it. Yeah.
By the way, By the way, if you guys want to talk about GW behind his back in front of his face, now is a good time to do that.
Okay. And,
hey, for those of you on the conference call, Jennifer, Brad, and everybody else, we have GW with us. Say hi, GW.
Hello.
Hey. Hello, GW.
Hello.
How are you doing, Jennifer?
I'm good, thanks. Hope you are, too.
Yes, doing good. Doing good.
Great.
Okay, so this loss, this particular court case is very important. It's 1973, so it's very, very recent as far as the time clock is concerned. Its title is Frankenhauser versus Rizzo, 59 FRD. Quote, it is the manner of enforcement which gives Title 42, 1983, its unique importance. For enforcement is placed in the hands of the people. Each citizen acts as a private attorney general who takes on the mantle of the sovereign, guarding for all of us the individual liberties enunciated in the Constitution. End quote. So when some law enforcement, some Leo says, are you talking about you being a sovereign citizen? Show them this court case. the courts tell you.
Frankenhauser versus Rizzo.
Rizzo. It's Frankenhauser v. Rizzo. R-I-Z-Z-O.
Z-Z-O. Okay.
59 FRD. I'll tell you what, everybody on the call, go to www.AmericanByBirth.com. American by Birth. This is a website I've dedicated to GW's work. And there's two PDFs there. The one that you want, that I'm reading from right now, is, quote, once we were colonists, subject to a king, a primer on jurisdiction. And the other is the greatest story never told. Those are the two PDFs to read. And every answer is there to any questions
I'm
you
sorry,
possibly
how,
have.
How do you get to that? I'm on the website.
You'll see, well, on the bottom, near the bottom, you'll see a PDF button you can press on. They're both there. You just look on the website. They're both there. Okay.
Yeah, something. I had a little quirk happen today when I was hooking up with PayPal because I had never had PayPal, so I was reading all their terms of service and everything. By the time I got done, they had timed me out, so I didn't quite get finished. I'm not sure I'm accessing or able to access the entire site yet, but I don't see anything about PDFs, so I think I'm just not.
All right, well, call me tomorrow late in the afternoon, Eastern Standard Time, after 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and I'll put your fingers on it. Right now, I've got to take care of some other things. There's one more.
Okay.
There's one more court case, and it's in Once We Were Colonists, Subject to a King. This is Hendricks versus Maryland. It's SC Reporters, pages 610 through 625. Now, this is older. It's a 1914 court case. It says, quote, a U.S. citizen upon leaving the District of Columbia, because that's where you're considered to be domiciled, having residence in one of the several states. It says, a U.S. citizen upon leaving the District of Columbia becomes involved in interstate commerce as a resident, does not have the common law right to travel of a citizen of one of the several states. Now, you show that to a law enforcement officer on the side of the road and say, look, this is a decided court case. This will be brought up in a trial that I will also be working with against you on in the court, and I don't want to, but have you made any investigation as to whether I'm a citizen of one of the several states? No, you just presume that I'm supposed to be under your thumb for this, and it's not what the law says. Just be kind, that's all.
Can I make a request right here?
Yeah, go ahead.
My GW, when I first met GW, he sent me two. One was an audio with some visual text. And I requested he would send those back to me because my phone did some kind of reset. I lost everything. And I would really like to listen to those again.
Yeah, GW, if you have those, send them to me, and I'll forward them to Brad.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you much.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Anything else for Jennifer and Brad? If not, we're going to go to Thomas in Beverly Hills.
I'm good.
All right. Real good. All right. Thomas.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Michael. Hey, you know, I really like GW because I learn something every time I listen to him, and I want to salute you for that. But really, I have been raising my hand on a lot of other calls, and it must have been recorded. But, Michael, I need for you to give me a call when you have some time because I need to get Friday's code. The code, and I just want to update you about me.
Sure. Now, I just checked my texts. The last two texts from me are that code for the Friday night call.
Oh, you know, either I'm not reading. Well, that's one of the things I want. Just give me a call. I could tell you. You why. All right.
All right. Well, it's late here on my side. I'll call you tomorrow afternoon.
Sounds great. Thank you, sir. You have a blessed day.
All right.
By the way, everything you said about GW, every time you listen to him, you learn something? We all do.
Every time. Yeah.
Every time.
Oh, no. I think he's excellent. Thank you very much.
I think he's excellent, too.
Yeah. All right. I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. Tune in tomorrow. Tomorrow will be a presentation by Mr. Slevin regarding a limited liability company that by its most unique creation, how it comes into being, which is initiated by someone who has never had a Social Security number. That's the key. And it's a limited liability company that has no tax reporting responsibilities, does not pay taxes, just like the same with the corporation sole and a charitable religious trust. So join us in for that. I want to thank GW for slipping in tonight and joining us. GW, actually, you're on my call list for later this week, possibly, or first of next week, so you'll be expecting that. Thank you, John, for a wonderful presentation tonight. And if anyone would like a copy of the recording for tonight's call, just simply text me or Skype me email me, rather, and I'll be happy to supply that for you. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
Okay. Good night.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.